Hello, it is June 1st, 2015. You are looking live at Charleston, South Carolina. This is episode 5.8 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports and Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. I am in Folly Beach, South Carolina, on a working vacation, which is much as, I guess, my life. I really just kind of consider my life a working vacation, all told. But this is officially a working vacation that I'm away from my home. And there's water outside. I mean, this is always water outside, but here there's an ocean attached to the water. Anyway, I'm in Folly Beach. This place, I picked up a copy of the Charleston City Paper, the Alt Weekly, here in Charleston. I love a town with an Alt Weekly. And they, this place was recently gronked. Rob Gronkowski was here for a week. Having walked around the streets of Charleston today, or excuse me, the streets of Folly Beach today, this looks like a place where a Gronk might congregate. There are a lot of miniature Gronks walking out there today. But I'm here with my family, looking at the beach from my window, which I guess counts as a vacation. Anyway, I will be here all week. We have two podcasts this week. I'm talking today, of course, to Allison Futter, national correspondent for MLB.com. Later on this week, I will be previewing the NBA Finals with Alex Wong, who is an NBA writer for Sports on Earth, also Vice Sports and The Classical, among many other places. But today, we're going to try to avoid being gronked. I'm going to consider this podcast a gronking to remember. Anyway, here's Allison talking baseball stuff. So let's get gronked, everybody. All right, Allison, hello. Welcome. I hope you are... How is your... This is the first... this is the official... I know it's not officially summer, but Memorial Day is the start of the summer. Does it feel summer to you yet? Or I feel like when you cover baseball, once it stops getting cold, it's just a perpetual summer.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little different in Houston because it stops getting cold in February. Yes. So, but it's been raining.
Is everything okay? Are you okay? Everything's all right? Nothing's underwater? You're all right?
No, I mean, there's a lot of things that are underwater. Fortunately, nothing that I own. Okay. I came home last night. My electricity was out for a while. But it's just insane that it just hasn't stopped raining for like 2 weeks. It's very sunny right now, and it's not supposed to rain this week. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know what it's felt like. It's felt very spring-like because of all this rain. But, it, you know, when in Houston, it's hot starting, you know, the baseball season starts, and it's already hot. So we don't have that rite of passage where we're like, okay, it's June, and now it's really summer. It's been summer for a while.
All right, so when we were talking about topics for this week, and you actually brought up a great one, so I think it's a really fascinating one, because, you know, the idea of when managers are at fault, when they should get fired, when so on, and you have a great example of this, and that I'm very excited to have you talk about. And because I'm always the idea of what a manager does and what a manager doesn't do, and what a manager is responsible and what a manager isn't responsible for. It's always kind of this secret. Like, you know, in the 40s, we just assumed the manager, people just pretended the managers were responsible for everything. And now we kind of know better in a lot of ways. In a lot of ways, manager feels like a middle manager in a lot of ways now. And it's strange, you know, we've seen this with Dan Jennings in Miami being the big guy that everyone loves. Other managers are picking on him, which is kind of amazing. I never thought we would see that. But you ever think about,
right?
Really, it's kind of wild that other managers are ripping on, like, managers. It feels like the one thing in the life of a manager that you hate the most is being second-guessed. And now they hate this guy so much that the other managers are second guessing. It's such kind of a jerk thing to do. But I want to talk about, when you talk about people on the hot seat, people have talked about Jay Gibbons, people have talked about Robin Ventura. But certainly Brian Price, I think the minute that he kind of went on that rant about Trent Rosecrans from the Cincinnati Inquirer, his job, I don't think yelling at a reporter will get you fired, but certainly shone a light on him, and maybe with the Reds' disappointing start has made it more difficult than he would have thought. But I think it's interesting, and as you pointed out, and I want to talk about this, the idea of the Reds hosting the All-Star game this year and kind of how that affects Brian Price's job or doesn't.
Yeah, well, first of all, I think that, right, you can't fire someone for, even though he completely humiliated himself with that situation with Trent Rosecrans, because it was so uncalled for and so out of line and so wrong.
Yeah, weird. That was
the shows that he doesn't handle.
Yeah, it was really weird. Wrong, right.
Go ahead.
No, it was just wrong. Like, that was the weird thing about it. Is that, like regardless of whether he was, like, he didn't even seem to understand how his job worked.
No, he clearly doesn't understand what the reporter's job worked. But those were things you can learn, and those were things he actually does probably know, and he just doesn't really want it to be true. The problem is that he's not handling pressure well at all. And so he's not even very long into his tenure as manager, and he's already starting to show cracks that are really, I mean, some of the things that are happening with the Reds really aren't his fault. I mean, there's just, it's kind of an incomplete team, and there's lots of key injuries, and there's just some, they're kind of in a transitional time. And if you can't handle that, how do you handle a pennant race in September? How do you handle massive amounts of ups and downs that go throughout a season? So that was the issue that I had with that. But this is becoming extremely similar to a situation that the Astros had. So they were hosting the All-Star game in 2004. Jimmy Williams was in his third year as manager of the Astros. And the Astros had these huge expectations in 2004. They signed Andy Pettitte, they signed Roger Clemens, they had this all-star team, and they started off like 21 and 10, 21 and 11. Those are loose estimations. And then they were really bad for like a month and a half. And they go into the All-Star break 44 and 44, which is a 500 team, which is not terrible. Except for that team, it was really bad. And there was so much speculation that Jimmy Williams was going to be fired. And so, of course, the manager of the home team, of the host team of the All-Star game, is one of the coaches on the coaching staff, which is, by the way, a very weird dynamic in itself. So you got at Minute Maid Park, and you've got the manager's office, which is Jimmy Williams' office. Jack McKeon's in there. Then you've got the coach's locker room where Jimmy is with the rest of the coaches. And rumors were flying so much that he was going to get fired. And we had to kind of stake out the clubhouse after the game. We had to wait outside the coach's office to see if he would talk. Meanwhile, Phil Garner, who was a Houston resident and who everybody thought might be a logical choice, he had to not go to the All-Star game. He had to give his tickets away because it was just, that's how much this thing appeared to be happening. Meanwhile, it's the pregame introductions at the All-Star game, and Jimmy is introduced, and he is booed by the crowd, which everyone knew was going to happen. And after all of this, and after all of this, how uncomfortable it was, the next morning at 10 a.m., they announce they're having a press conference and they fire him. So, my point is, it was handled horribly by the Astros. I mean, it didn't need to get that far. They didn't need for Jimmy to be out there humiliating himself. They knew that they weren't going to keep him as manager. There were all these things that could have happened. It could have happened. They could have handled it with class and dignity. They did none of that. Absolutely none of it. It came right from ownership. So anyway, now you're seeing all of these stories out there and all of this. You know, Brian Price's, his job is safe right now. Walt Jocketty has a lot of patience, and the Castellinis, and oh, they're hosting the All-Star game. He's safe through the All-Star game. It's like, if you guys think that having Brian Price introduced as a coach and getting booed and then firing him right after the All-Star game is like a better way to go, rethink it. So if you don't want him managing your team, I would recommend doing something before the All-Star game hits, when by the way, every media member will be in Cincinnati wanting to cover what may happen with Brian Price. And everyone's going to be there. And it's just a really uncomfortable, bad situation. And I hope it doesn't happen to him, because he's actually a good person, a very intelligent, thoughtful guy. I think that he could be successful in the right situation. He's not really handling himself well, but this is not like a bad person, and you should not want to humiliate somebody that you have a relationship with in any way.
Yeah, the Reds are kind of in
Yeah.
a weird situation with the All-Star game anyway, because like I think that they were hoping to get to at least a 500 start, so they could say we're still in this, rather than like be never mind the Pete Rose disaster that you and I both know is coming for the All-Star game
Yes.
that we're all kind of dreading. But that's a later podcast. But like just the
Right.
notion that like anytime a team hosts an All-Star game, there's always this sense that like, oh, we need to be like somewhat in contention, or we need to be relevant. Otherwise, we're just like, you want them to be exciting during that time. You know, you want a stud, you know, your stud pitcher pitching in the game. You know, ideally, I would have loved to had Cueto starting this game or something like that.
Right.
But like it's weird because the Reds, I feel like holding on, because I agree. You definitely sense from them that they're holding off on any major moves until this All-Star game business gets over, which is weird because they probably are a year late already. Unlike some, like
Right.
regardless of the manager, but a year later, a lot of like clearing out. You know, I mean, you've seen arguments that even Aroldis Chapman should be traded in a lot of ways. And
Sure.
so when you look at, it's a weird kind of thing to think that the All-Star game has that much power. And you've been to a lot of All-Star games. I've been to a lot of All-Star games as well. You've been to more than I have, but I've been in them too, and they're really fun, and I find them very cleansing and very enjoyable, and they reinvigorate my love, my unironic, completely like dopey, every piece of team gear wearing, face painted, nerdy fan love for the game. The All-Star Game is really good at kind of like replenishing that for me, but certainly it's not that big of a deal. It's really not big enough a deal that the Reds should like change their whole strategy for what they're doing or put off something that they need to be doing because they have the All-Star Game. And I think you see this with Price, and it's weird because you're right. I hear that. I've never met Brian Price. I've never interviewed Brian Price, but certainly every person you talk to, they say something similar to what you say, like, "Oh, he's a great guy. Like, he's a really thoughtful guy," and so on. And it's funny though. I have to say, the minute he did that rant, regardless of whether he was right or wrong, like Lee Elia was probably right about the Cubs fans when he freaked out and started screaming about in the '80s when he started screaming about how these guys don't have jobs and they're just hanging around brewing all day. But like, it doesn't really matter whether you're right or wrong. Brian Price will be remembered for that rant forever. Like, he'll be remembered for that.
Yes,
Like.
It was so uncharacteristic of him, and to just use the same word 77 times.
77
and to
times.
not, yeah, well, and to not sit there and say, like, first of all, if you have any, the thing is that he needs media training is what he needs. If he could get media training, I think that he would learn a lot. First of all, if you want to have this kind of conversation, you have to say, okay, can I, first of all, you pull Trent aside and you have a stern conversation with him, but you make sure that you're off the record. You're like, okay, recorder's off. I have a question for you. You know, I mean, you can't just go right into this with the camera, well, there were no cameras, but with recorders recording and think that this is something that's a private conversation. And there's, you know, the way that the managers work with the media, it's like they understand, like, no, you're not there to protect us. You're not there to hide our little secrets. But if there's something going on with the player and you can pull the reporters aside and say, look, here's what's going on. We don't really want this out right now, but just to give you some perspective and a little bit of, you know, background information, this is why this is happening. And then the reporter's like, okay. And then they just keep it to themselves. And then when it becomes relevant, then that news will come. I mean, I remember at a doubleheader, the Astros were playing a doubleheader somewhere. Andy Pettitte, it must have been 04, Andy Pettitte was pushing through an injury. It was very clear that he was going to have surgery. But he was scheduled to pitch the second game of the doubleheader. And in between games, Phil Gardner says, or before the first game, Phil Gardner says, Andy Pettitte is not going to be pitching the second game. Please do not go with it until the last out of the first game. When the last out of the first game is made, go with it. And this was before Twitter and Facebook. This was just straight up like posting stuff on your websites. Please, we just don't want that information out there for the 3 hours that we're playing this first game. Fine. We have no problem with that. But if you're asking me to try to find the stuff out on my own and you're going to be, you know, sneaky and conniving and combative with me, I'm probably just going to figure it out on my own and go with it whenever I feel like it.
Well, it's weird too, because, you know, when you look at someone like Price, and you look at what the job of the manager is now. Like, the job of a manager now, basically, like, now that the general manager has such sway over roster construction, and oftentimes, like, you know, the general manager clearly has taken the reins of power in a lot of ways over the manager. And
yes.
So when you look at the job of a manager now, certainly when you see these young managers like Ryan Sandberg, like Mike Matheny, like these, you know, like Robin Ventura, these guys, clearly their job is, A, to be respected by the clubhouse, and B, not to be bad with the media. Like, those, like, or more accurately, to be the public representative of the team. And it's weird that those, to me, I mean, like, maybe I'm, and to, I guess, make out the lineup, though even that, I think, probably has more general manager influence than it used to. So,
absolutely.
So to me, the two biggest part of your jobs is to make sure the clubhouse likes you, which is clearly the problem in Miami. and to be good with the media, which may also be a problem with Miami. But, like, that's the job of a manager now. It's why they're able to give it to someone. Like, and I've ripped on Mike Matheny a little bit in the past, so I think he's getting better. And I understand why the Cardinals have him as the manager, even if some of his strategic moves drive me crazy. But I think general managers are hiring managers less for strategic, because they recognize strategy doesn't matter as much as it used to, as much as you need the clubhouse to like you, and you need a good public representative of the team. You need a leader as opposed to some strategic magic mastermind. But if you're really bad with the media, or really bad as a public face of the team, I feel like you've screwed up half of your job already.
Right.
And so, like, for me, a guy like Price, who may be this great guy, but like, I'll put it this way, to be as bad with the media as Price is, or to be as disrespected by your team as, say, Jennings is, you better have like figured out like three-dimensional chess when it comes to being strategy. Right. Because otherwise, and I don't think you can. I don't think a manager has that much effect over strategy. Therefore, my ultimate point of this is, if you're bad, if you have a bad public image or your team doesn't like you, you're a lousy manager, regardless of whether or not you fill out a lineup card good or can pull off a double switch.
Right. And in Dan Jennings' defense, I mean, I don't think it's that people hate him. He is not a manager. He is a general manager. Right. Dan Jennings right now is a general manager wearing a baseball uniform. Yeah. And he looks awkward. And it's strange and odd. And that is why people are hoping this doesn't work out. Dan Jennings, as a GM and as a guy that you see around the press boxes down on the field, he's one of the most likable people in baseball and very well respected. And everyone has good things to say about him. But they want the Marlins to fail, not some Dan Jennings. They want the Marlins to fail.
Okay. And I didn't want to make this a whole topic, but I actually feel like this is pretty fascinating. So I want to talk about the Jennings things a little bit. Because on one hand, right. I get it. Like, it also, like, he's kind of said some silly things since he's become manager that I think have been kind of easily mocked a little bit. But it does feel like a large part of this comes down to he wasn't wearing the uniform a week ago. He hasn't worn the uniform enough. Therefore, we don't respect him as a manager. Like, Mike Matheny had never managed anything above Little League in his life. And the Cardinals gave him the manager job. And everyone was like, that's okay. He was recently playing. Ryan Sandberg had done some minor leagues, stuff. But certainly you see Bo Porter, I think, had an example of this in Houston a little bit. You know, you see these guys who, like, what is less qualifying about Dan Jennings than Mike Matheny?
The fact that he didn't play. It's exactly right. It's the fact that he
just
didn't
have... Just because he wore a uniform? Is that it? Like, it's playing an inherent qualification for being a manager.
Well, I think that... Actually, I think catching in the major leagues is definitely a qualification for being a manager. I think people are insulted. I mean, I think it's insulting because they're basically saying that you could put anybody in there and to do that job.
But isn't that the way the baseball's going now?
Maybe people are scared of the way it's going.
Yeah. I feel like Jennings is a representation of a direction that things are going. I mean, because listen, I love Buck Showalter. Like, Buck Showalter is the guy I want managing my team. He, to me, represents what a manager is and should be. But the fact that he went after Dan Jennings, to me, was a pretty good sign. Oh, they're pissed. the fact that he went after Jennings, like, Showalter, who I at this point consider like the president of the fraternity of managers in a lot of ways, when he went after Jennings, and I understand why they would feel threatened by that, but isn't there an argument that they should feel threatened by this? Because the idea of, you know, the Tony La Russa-esque manager, the idea where you are the leader, the manager runs everything now, I understand why a manager would be threatened by that. But why would a manager be just as threatened by Mike Matheny, who's never managed a game in his life, all of a sudden just getting a job too?
Yeah, well, because, I mean, baseball players will tell you that there are just certain things that you cannot possibly understand if you have not actually played the game. That's just what it is. And I mean, there are people that take it to an extreme and use it as like a condescending element where they're not really sure what they're saying. But like, I've heard Lance Berkman just say, like, just point blank, there are just things about this game that you cannot understand if you didn't play it.
But they never tell us what they are. They always just kind of like say that, and then we're just like, I feel like this is the case in any job in the entire world. Like, if you do that job, you can always say to a person that doesn't do that job, oh, you just really can't get it. You'll never know until you've written on deadline. You'll never know until you've climbed this light pole and fixed this electric fixture.
Let me answer this. The general manager basically stays out of the clubhouse. Like, the general manager makes a point of really not spending any time around the actual players in their environment, and because they don't want to get too close and they have to make tough decisions. So are general managers qualified to know what in the world is going on from a day-to-day basis inside of a clubhouse, how that whole thing works, how guys think, how they feel, you know, how they talk, what they do after games? If they know... They know none of this?
Okay, see, that brings me to, I think you're right, and I think there's something to this idea of that's, like, Managers are middle managers, like you would see in any other office. That's what managers are. They're middle managers. They don't actually make any of the larger decisions the way the general manager does. And I think this is why the big Dan Jennings mistake is it would be like the CEO of your company coming in to, or the head of the regional, whatever, and coming into your individual office and saying, okay, guys, now I'm your manager for the week, so let's limit our copy machine usage and everyone be careful of your coffee breaks. Like, that's what a manager is. He's a middle manager. He's the guy that the employees have to respect, but doesn't actually have any real power.
Right. They might not have power, but I think that they do a little bit more than you might think that they do. I mean, I really
I mean,
do.
no, I think it's important that their employees respect them. I think without question, we've seen what happens when managers don't respect, I mean, when players don't respect a manager, no matter how good of a general manager they have, and no matter how, like, clearly it is a job requirement to have your team respect you. And it is a job requirement for you to be a public representative of the team. But this ephemeral thing, and you're right, players say this all the time. Well, you really can't understand it until you've done it. But no one ever tells me what that is. I don't know actually what that thing is that they do that you can't possibly do unless you've played the game.
Well, I don't think that you can really truly at its heart understand the amount of failure that these guys do have to experience through a career unless you've actually done it. I mean, I do feel that that's
Oh.
part of it.
For the record, I've got them on failure. Okay, if that's a qualification, I can absolutely do this job. But no, I am saying, of course, you're exactly right, and I think you're right about that. But I wonder if that's less actual thing that you need to know to be able to do the job, and more going into the have to be respected by your players. And I feel like when play, I feel like it ultimately does become a qual, like ultimately you do have to have played, and we're seeing this with Dan Jennings. Ultimately, you do have to have played, not because, in my opinion, and of course I know because I totally sat here and typed all day, and but it does seem like it is you need to have worn a uniform, not because wearing a uniform actually gives you an access to information and knowledge that you wouldn't have otherwise, but players just won't respect you.
You're right. No, that's a lot of it. But also think about it from the player's perspective, from a Marlins perspective. So they've got their general manager who's now managing and could possibly go back up and be a general manager after the season. How much are they talking to Dan Jennings? How much are they going to be frank with him? He's going to be fighting them in arbitration in the offseason. He's going to be trying to explain to them why they suck to and don't deserve the $4 million and only deserve 2.5. So can he go back into the general manager role? I mean, you have to be able to be an open communicator throughout a season, and I doubt that these guys are going to feel like they can really talk to him.
Which is fun because there used to be general managers and managers the same all the time. But you're right, the game has evolved so much now, and everyone's kind of got in their roles. Like, I don't think people, I don't, not to go Cardinals again on you, but I don't think that like Ozzie Smith and Willie McGee didn't play for Whitey Herzog because he controlled their jobs. But that was a different time. Like that was a different
Yes.
time, and I think the way the roles are now, it does feel like the general manager is the suit, and the manager is the middle manager, and that's why. And again, I think we actually agree on this. I think we're on the same side on this. I just think that I am looking for the piece, that specific thing. Any of them, because apparently there's dozens or hundreds of things that a manager can only know because they wore the uniform. Because you hear that, you're right about Berkman. You hear this constantly in Berkman. And listen, Lance Berkman, as you know as well as anyone, this is if anyone's a good representation of what it's like to be a player and what it feels like to be a player, Lance Berkman is a pretty great representation of that,
Right.
and a very eloquent spokesperson for that. And eloquent, maybe not, but smart.
Oh, no, he is. He's extreme. That's the thing. When Lance says it, it sounds one way. Jimmy Williams used to say it to us, and it was just condescending and sneering. It was completely insulting. You couldn't possibly understand this little tiny thing that I could easily explain to you if I would just take 3 minutes and explain it to you. But instead, I'm just going to say, you
You
don't
don't get it.
know because you never played. It's like, you know what? But when Lance says it, it's a little bit different, and there's just nuances to hitting. There's, it's a whole kind of science, and there's just like, I don't know what that's like. And he does. And you can relate to baseball players when you actually have been one.
And I, it's right. You're right. And I feel like that is, if anything, it's funny, but it's interesting too, because, and then we'll close with this because we've gone for a long time on this, because this is actually an awesome topic, and I can tell because you came up with it. I come up with topics every week, and we just babble. I just babble on for a little bit, and you actually came up with the topic this week, and we're like, oh, it filled up the whole show because Allison knows what she's talking about. But one thing I find interesting about this too is, we saw AJ Hinch when he was hired by Arizona. When he was hired by Arizona, that was the big thing. He never played. No one gets it. No one.
No, he played. He played.
Yeah, but he was not like this was a problem though. Like he played, but had he played in the majors? Oh,
Yes.
that's right. You're right. You're right. He totally did. You're right. You're right.
Don't let him hear you say that.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But he never managed before. Is that it? Wasn't there an issue when Hinch managed the A's? Excuse me. When he managed, who am I thinking of? The Diamondbacks. When Hinch managed the Diamondbacks, wasn't there like an issue about him managing that team? But they didn't feel like he would. He's 35. He was really young.
Yeah, he was 34, and he just they kind of like put him in that position after being in the front office, and he wasn't ready for it in any way, shape, or form, and it was disastrous. From it was also coming off of they had fired Bob Melvin, who the entire club team loved. There was the team was really bad, and then they fire their beloved manager, and they bring this kid in who had never done anything. And AJ is extremely smart, and sometimes you can't just walk into a clubhouse and inform everybody of how intelligent you are right away. And I think that people just the players kind of resented it, and they were it's a bad team. So that's the main thing, is that they were losing so much, and so AJ was a target, and he admits, he's like, I didn't have any idea, what I was really in for, and he's better for it, but no, it didn't go well.
What about Bo? I'm gonna wrap this up with this because you're right. I'm totally an idiot about AJ Hinch. But Bo Porter, like I remember when Bo Porter, I wrote a piece for Bo Porter after he there was like some sort of they had, someone threw at somebody else, and someone threw at somebody else, and everyone was acting like they were 11. And Bo Porter kind of was being an idiot about it and kind of freaked out. And my argument was because when Bo Porter was hired for that job, he had to have known he was going to be losing 110 games a year. And on one hand, you can say that. You can say, oh, I understand this is a rebuilding process. I'm here to represent the team. I understand. But, like, I have to say, to me, it looks like Bo Porter was the guy that just was there to get beaten up for 3 years until they started to get a little better and then they could get someone else in there. Because by the end, he was starting to crack, as anyone would if they were managing a team that lost 110 games a year. So I wonder, but Bo Porter could be a brilliant manager. We have, like, no idea because he
No,
was in part.
yeah, I think we're pretty certain he's not going to be a brilliant manager.
I don't know. I mean, like, why is he a bad manager? Like, he had a horrible team.
Right.
Like, there
He
was
didn't.
no way he was going to win. And at the end, it drove him crazy because he had a horrible team.
Right, and he would leave spring training with not the best team that they could have put together. I mean, there were times that there were players that could have made that team better that were not going to make the team. So,
Right. Which is very, I'm sure, very frustrating for a manager.
right, but he. It was such a bad hire from day one, and it was never going to work. But Jeff Luhnow never respected him, and so en route to this disastrous relationship, and he never respected him from the start. And so, the communication was not good, and that's how a lot of these public debacles ended up starting. Is just because he wasn't talking. Luhnow wasn't talking to Porter about things that Porter needed to be in the loop for. So there was fault on. I mean, Bo was set up to absolutely fail, but there was fault from everyone, like how bad it was. But Bo had crazy ideas coming in to spring training his first year, and it was just alarm bells were going all over the place in my mind, and it did not surprise me. The only thing that surprised me is he lasted as long as he did.
Yeah, and he was. It certainly always seemed an odd match. But I mean,
Yes.
as you and our friend Nozyla, no, Houston has been through quite a bit of up and down recently. We've discussed this manager thing all the way through, and I think this is actually fine. This will happen occasionally, but we just talk about one topic all the way through because I think this is fascinating. I'm sure you're right. I know you're right because you know this stuff better than I do. But still, it still seems to me that like. It is a. I do not believe Lance. Listen, if Lance Berkman's right here, listen. 2011 World Series. I will listen to everything Lance Berkman tells me forever, forever, and ever, and ever, no matter what. But I still just like I personally believe that this ineffable thing that they keep telling us that only you can understand, you can only be a manager if you've played before and played fairly recently and worn the uniform. I really think what that really is. It's not actually. I understand how to play the game better, and there's this specific little thing. They do understand how to play the game better, but there's this specific little nugget of wisdom that only they can understand because they've done it, and that makes them a better manager. I don't think it's actually that. I think it is just that players won't respect them, if they haven't done that, and that's enough, frankly. I don't think it even matters if strategy wise, players won't respect them if they haven't done it. And we've seen with Jennings how even Dan Jennings could be a brilliant tactical mind, but it
Right.
just doesn't matter.
Well, and I mean, can he manage 25 people?
Right.
Like,
Can
I
he be
think
a middle manager?
that's the
Can he
main
be a middle
part of being
manager?
a manager is you have to be able to manage people.
Yeah, being a middle manager. This brings us full circle. It's and I think smart GMs, and I think you're right, bringing up Luhnow, who of course, has been on the vanguard of things and also been cocky about things. To me, I feel like the AJ Hinch is the example of both Hinch becoming a better manager and being more prepared, and also Luhnow learning. Because it does feel like you're right. When he hired Porter, he was kind of like, the manager doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Just stick out whoever is out there. I don't even respect this guy. And that's what happens if you don't do it right. It feels like the smart general manager understands that the manager is, on one hand, not that important, on the other hand, incredibly important. And I feel like that's the smart play, I guess, in that regard.
Yeah, no, he's learned quite a bit. I mean, he's been humbled and he's had some pretty rough times. And I think that he has learned because these are, this front office, they are what has been written about them in a lot of ways, and that they're kind of robotic and they just see numbers and they don't see people. But he was smart enough to hire the total opposite from them from a personality standpoint. And AJ Hinch, he is the guy who cares and who thinks about people and thinks about, what people are thinking and feeling and doing. And so if they can't be that way, they certainly were smart enough to put somebody up front who is.
And so, all right, so we'll close with that and the fact that the Brewers just won in the bottom of the 17th inning. So pity the poor folk that finally the 11 to 15 fans in Milwaukee that now just got to go home. And I know if it's Milwaukee is a great baseball city that has always sold out fans, but 17 innings with the team when you have the worst game. Any fan that stayed to the end of the Brewers game that was 17 innings for a team that has the worst record in baseball gets another team that's under 500. That is my kind of baseball fan.
They should definitely get free hot dogs the next time they go to the ballpark.
Without question. Or a free chorizo. I think the chorizo is one of the sausage racers there. I always root for the chorizo when I'm there.
You root for the underdog.
I always root for the underdog. I love the chorizo. All right, Allison, this is a really good example of why you need to come up with the topics every week because we just picked the one topic you went, we just drilled through. Usually it's like, I don't know, let's talk about Mike Matheny some more. You came in and nailed the topic this week. So next week, I figure we're going to be getting pretty close to next week is the draft. The draft is going to
Okay.
be next Monday. We could talk about it. I don't know. What do you think? Well, let's have a little production meeting on the air. What do you think about the draft? Like, I don't know. Like I want, like, how. I really love baseball, and like you really love baseball. This is ingrained in both of our lives. And I pretty much just wait for Jonathan Mayo to tell me what I'm supposed to think.
You and I both, yes. I mean, I do not get excited for the draft. It's the most important thing that a team will do every year, but I really read very little about like the guys that might be drafted, and I just kind of wait for it to unfold in front of me, and then I start learning about the players. So I'd rather talk about Bartolo
Yeah, I
Colon.
know. We'll talk about Nikola next week. And the fact that he hit a ball to the wall in center field today and got a double. And bless his heart. We'll get into that next. I'm sure Bartolo Colon will do something virally amusing in the next 7 days that we'll be able to talk to about next week. But for now, thank you, Allison. As always, this has been it's a pleasure. I'm starting to have some legitimate, real fun with these. Are you hanging? Are you bored? You want to keep playing? This is fun.
Oh no, this is one of my highlights of my week. No, we got to keep going. This is my outlet. This is where I get to express all of my angst and opinions.
Well, listen. Be careful, though. Be careful, because next thing you know, you're Bayless. You're just shooting hot takes out of everywhere. Yeah, next thing you know, it's like, why can't LeBron fly? Why can't he fly? Huh? Why can't he fly or soar into the air and fly to the moon? If you can't do that, I'm not impressed. That's what
I just don't.
happens.
I don't want to be screaming. I don't want to start screaming. So, people out there, if you're listening, if I start screaming, just tweet me and tell me to take it down a notch. I don't want to become a screaming talking head like you see on these shows. I can't stand it.
I don't think talking to me, you're going to be in any danger of that. You're quite the reason why. All right, Allison, as always, a pleasure. We'll do this again next Sunday.
Okay, thanks,
All
Will.
right, thanks to Allison Futter, national correspondent for MLB.com. Of course, check her stuff out on MLB.com all week, and follow her on Twitter at Allison Futter, AlysonFootter. I know Allison is the actual reason that you listen to this podcast, so please follow me on Twitter. So I'm endorsing her and getting you to follow her, but she don't need it. I'm the one that needs that. So this is the Willis Experience Podcast, Footer and Leech edition. Music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We'll be back on, I believe, Tuesday or Wednesday with Alex Wong, who will preview the NBA Finals for us. But have a wonderful week. Bye, Allison. I'll talk to you guys later.